Sun's Weekend All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with African football. Mali will meet defending champion Morocco in Sunday's African Nations Championship final in Yaounde, Cameroon. In semifinal results Wednesday, Mali edged neighbor Guinea 5-4 on penalty kicks in Douala, Cameroon. The teams played to a scoreless draw during full and extra time. In the second semifinal, Morocco beat host Cameroon 4-0 in Limbe. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Raja Casablanca striker Soufiane Rahimi, who had two goals for the Atlas Lions of Morocco. The 24-year-old Rahimi has now scored a tournament-leading 5 goals during the CHAN competition, which is for African players who ply their trade in their domestic leagues. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, African football analyst Emeka Enyadike said the Moroccans have been very impressive as they try to retain the CHAN trophy.
Now, I think the championship has been quite interesting. Lots of exciting matches and not so much more than what you have from the semifinals, especially the second game between Cameroon and Morocco. And Morocco's really shown that their win from the last championship wasn't a fluke. And what was most remarkable is that this championship has reflected something that kind of epitomizes where the African club championships are, because it's the same players who are playing in Africa. And if you look back at last season, we had 4 Moroccan teams in the semifinals of both the CAF Champions League and the CAF Confederations Cup. So I think that it's a good reflection. It shows how strategically a lot of the local leagues have placed themselves, and you can find from the strength of the Moroccan team and just how fantastic the performance was.
Defending champion Atlas Lions of Morocco will meet the Eagles of Mali in the final of the CHAN tournament. What are your expectations on the match?
That final should be really explosive. Morocco versus Mali. We've seen some remarkable performance from Mali, and the Malian clubs have also been doing well, especially Stade Malien, and a lot of these players who play in Africa, they do pretty well. And that's why from over the years you've seen CHAN teams from Congo as well, where TP Mazembe and AS Vita do very well. So Mali against Morocco will be very, very, very explosive. And I think that even though Morocco were dominant and totally hit Cameroon 4-0, doesn't mean that they're going to run over Mali. I expect probably the best game of the tournament from the finals, because it's going to be very, very tactical. And what will happen is if Morocco doesn't score quite early, and then the Malians might be looking at keeping the score to a point where they can maybe try and run out with a penalty shootout win or something like that. But I think that Morocco are the odds on favorite to win this tournament, but I still think it can go either way, and I'm looking forward to an explosive game.
Do you have a special or outstanding team in the CHAN tournament so far?
In my opinion, I would say Morocco. I think that they've carried them from the last championship, and what we've seen, they've saved their best for. It wasn't a surprise. I think it was just the sheer magnitude of the sign that I would say was a little bit of a surprise, because Cameroon playing at home have managed to keep their head in front, and a lot of people would have fancied them to try and get a result. There was a lot of drama, heading into this game, that you would think that the pressure would be on the Moroccans. But to actually go to Cameroon and not just beat them by the odd goal, but beat them by 4-0, that marks them out as just probably the best CHAN team for the last 2 years, or the last two editions. So I think that they are.
That's African football analyst Emeka Enyadike. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Hi, my name is Emeka Enyadike from the City of Gold, Johannesburg. I want to say a big shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
Thank you, Emeka.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Elsewhere in African football, a veteran midfielder whose pressure penalty kick won the 2009 FIFA Under-20 World Cup trophy for Ghana recently announced his retirement from international duty. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Yao Afusu-Larbi joins us once again from Accra, Ghana. Sporty greetings, Yao!
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Emmanuel Ajimabedu was one of the most prominent midfielders of his era. The man could do many things in his role and still score goals. He played 76 times for the Black Stars in a career that spanned 11 years. He scored 11 goals along the way, and there were some fine ones too. So when he decided to hang up his boots from the Black Stars, there was good praise for him after the announcement. The midfielder did on his personal Twitter account. When Ajimabedu started in Brekum in Ghana's middle belt as a youth player, little did he know that his career would go down as one of the best. He played in one FIFA World Cup, and in 2009, he won the Under-20 FIFA World Cup with Ghana scoring the winning penalty.
Africa are one kick away from their first ever success at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup. If Badu can score this penalty, is it Africa? Is it Africa? It is! Ghana have won the competition for the first time.
So let me tell you this interesting story. I think we left with three players post. Myself, David Daddy, and Opoku Ajman. So when it came to that kick, I asked both of them because...
It came to the final kick?
Yes. Yeah. I asked David if he won. He said no. Because at that time, he was playing Randers in Denmark. Then I asked Opoku Ajman. Then he also said no. Then he said something went through my mind. I said, hey, those who are playing in Europe said no. So just imagine if I made this one, I will come to Accra and drive from Accra to Kumasi to Joe Kotoko. At that time, I think they will finish me in Ghana.
Exactly.
I think I gathered the courage. I said, okay, maybe it's my time for me to do something for my nation, myself, and my family. So let me just go for it. Thankfully, I went and the goalkeeper made it so easy for me.
That penalty has since been synonymous to his name, and he amassed a ton of fans for himself after that. On his retirement from national team duties, Bedu believes this is the right time to call his international career over.
I took this decision 6 months ago.
6 months ago?
Yeah. I wanted to concentrate on club level. It's been like 2 years I've not been in the team. I started playing for the Blasters around like 2009. Consistent for 9 solid years, 5 AFCONs, 1 World Cup. I think I have done my part. I tried to win African Cup for the nation 5 consecutive times and I couldn't. There's a saying, if a man goes to war for 3 times, fortunately for me, I have gone for 5 times and I think it's time for me to leave the team for the new generation to try and win something for the nation.
Bedu has played for Brekum Arsenal and Asante Kotoko in Ghana, Udinese and Elas Verona in Italy, via Bursaspor in Turkey. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yao Fosu-Larbi in Accra.
Of Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel and VOA's Daybreak Africa host James Buddy talk with Judd Devermont, director of the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, about prospects for a more dynamic Africa policy under the Biden administration. Listen to Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks, that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In American-style football, this evening we continue our preview of Sunday's 55th Super Bowl in Tampa, Florida. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers will host the defending Super Bowl champion, Kansas City Chiefs. The AP's Tom Akins reports the Chiefs are focused on winning a second consecutive Super Bowl title.
Under head coach Andy Reid, the Kansas City Chiefs have one thing in mind when they take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Super Bowl 55 on Sunday. Make it two in a row. Reid knows this is a special game.
Obviously a historic game from the standpoint that there's never been a home team that's played at their own facility. So I think that's a unique situation.
The defending champion Chiefs' high-powered offense is equipped to do just that, having averaged 415 yards per game during the regular season, including over 500 against these same Buccaneers just a couple months ago. Patrick Mahomes will have plenty of weapons at his disposal.
Instead of just soaking in all the glory of winning the Super Bowl last year, we went back to work, and we went to work every single day to make ourselves better, to prepare ourselves for every single situation that could arise, and it's put us in this game, but we have to keep going because we're playing a great football team.
I'm Tom Akins.
Thanks, Tom. The AP Steve Carney joins us now with a report on Tampa Bay's Super Bowl preparations.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers began their week of preparations for Super Bowl 55 by sitting down for Media Day, held virtually this year because of the COVID-19 pandemic. For defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul, it doesn't matter if the obligations this week are virtual or in person, the goal for him is the same.
The way it is now and the way it was back then, I don't even remember because it was so long ago, but I'm just here trying to win the game.
Head coach Bruce Arians says wide receiver Antonio Brown and safety Antoine Winfield Jr., who both missed the NFC Championship game in Green Bay, continue to progress toward possibly playing this week. The Bucs will be the first team to play a Super Bowl in their home stadium when they take on the Kansas City Chiefs at Raymond James Stadium Sunday evening. Steve Carney, Tampa.
Thanks, Steve. When Tampa Bay quarterback Tom Brady drops back to pass on Sunday, one of his targets will be three-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Mike Evans, who hopes to win his first Super Bowl.
As a goal of mine, it'll be huge. It'll be one of my best accomplishments, you know, in the sport, if not the best that I've done. So I definitely want to get this as a goal of mine. And, you know, we've been working all year for it. And, you know, we got to come out fighting because we're running some great teams.
That's Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver Mike Evans, who will play in Sunday's Super Bowl. Meanwhile, I have a few friends who watch the Super Bowl on television every year, but they don't watch the game so much as they watch the advertisements during breaks and play. And those ads will have a different look this year, as we hear now from the AP's Ed Donahue.
The Super Bowl during a pandemic will certainly look different from the field in Tampa with fewer fans, but it will look different on TV as well with the ads for the big game. Because of the pandemic, some big brand names will not be advertising during the Super Bowl.
Budweiser, Pepsi, Coke, Hyundai, Kia, they decided to sit out this year, and it's made room for a whole bunch of newcomers.
Janine Poggi with Ad Age says the ads will reflect the changes in our lives because of the pandemic. Scott's, for example.
Let's keep this backyard thing going. That's why Scott's and Miracle-Gro want to give you a chance to win the lawn and garden of your dreams.
You even have diapers advertising in the Super Bowl for the first time with Huggies.
Chipotle goes for telling a story.
What if this could change the world?
A burrito.
Yeah.
You are so weird.
I think this year you actually see more people really engaging with the ads and spending time watching the ads more so than in the past.
That is because of social distancing, there won't be big parties. I'm Ed Donahue.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is
is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight? Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Hi, I'm Francis Tiafo. You're listening to Sunnyside of Sports on Voice of America.
American tennis player Francis Tiafo is in Melbourne, where he's preparing for next week's Australian Open. On Thursday, Australian officials canceled play at the warm-up events in Melbourne after a quarantine worker at a player quarantine hotel tested positive for the coronavirus. Craig Gabriel reports from Melbourne, Australia.
When being breakpoint up with the incredible staging of the six lead-in events and then final preparations for the Australian Open starting Monday, 8th February, tournament officials must feel that their match point down at yet another crisis has hit the events. A quarantine worker at one of the player quarantine hotels has tested positive after initially being negative. Symptoms developed and the second test highlighted that the man had COVID. That is the first community case in Victoria in 28 days. As a result, over 500 players and their support staff who use the hotel have to be retested and isolate till there's an all clear. Tournament director Craig Tiley made the decision to cancel all matches once advised of the situation by the health department.
Those 507 players and their teams that were in the quarantine hotel between the 16th and the 29th of January were immediately notified last night that when they got up this morning at 9 o'clock we would start testing, and all of them would have to isolate, get a test, and then stay in isolation until they got permission from the health authorities to come out of isolation if they had a negative test.
Even the draw for the Australian Open has been delayed a day. Tiley is confident, though, that the situation will be fine and that the six lead-in events will finish on time this weekend, and the Australian Open will start as scheduled.
This does give us 3 days for the lead-in events to complete. Obviously, tomorrow we have some challenging weather, so we've got to work around that as well. And we'll start. The intention is to complete, is to start the Australian Open again on Monday. So there's no intention of changing the times for the Australian Open.
Tennis Australia has done a remarkable job in staging a total of 9 tournaments, with 6 in 1 week. They've endured many issues and criticisms from people who think they know all the facts, but in fact don't. Now it's time for the tennis to shine. Craig Gabriel for VOA Sports, Melbourne.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. On the basketball beat, two of the NBA's top international players, Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks and Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks, both turned in excellent all-around performances Wednesday night to lead their teams to victories. The AP's Dave Ferry reports.
Giannis Antetokounmpo had 21 points, 14 rebounds, and 10 assists before sitting out the fourth quarter of the Bucks' 130-110 blowout over the Pacers.
For now, I'm just doing what the team needs me to do, and which is good. Guys are getting involved. Guys are knocking down shots. Guys are feeling good.
The reigning two-time MVP shot 7 of 8 from the floor and 7 of 8 from the line for the Bucks, who also received 20 points from Bryn Forbes and 18 from Bobby Portis. Milwaukee never trailed and shot 21 of 48 from three-point range. The Bucks already have had 5 games with at least 20 threes this season after recording just 4 in team history. The Mavericks' 6-game losing streak is over after Luka Doncic scored 27 points and dished out 14 assists in a 122-116 decision over the Hawks.
It wasn't perfect the way we did it, but, you know, we got to win. That's all that matters to me. We were so happy after the game. You know, it's been a tough stretch. But, you know, it always feels good to win a game.
Doncic was 10 of 10 from the line and fell two rebounds shy of a triple-double. Kristaps Porzingis added 24 points and 11 rebounds for the Mavericks.
I got myself in a decent rhythm in some moments, and my teammates found me. Wasn't shooting the ball great from the outside, but then hit a more important three at the end. And at the end, we were able to get the win, and I'm happy about that.
The Mavericks pulled away at the start of the fourth and held on to snap their longest losing streak since the seven-game skid in March of 2019. John Collins led the Hawks with 35 points and 12 rebounds.
It says that my game's real, you know what I mean? If I can do it without getting to the line, it's, you know, all real buckets, so... Nothing to say about that. Just like I said, got to keep doing more of that.
I'm Dave Ferry.
Yo, yo, yo. Sporty greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigress Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carolo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. As we look forward to Sunday's 55th Super Bowl of American-style football, and Ndamukong Suh is one of the players of African heritage to watch. Suh wears number 93 for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he'll be one of the biggest players on the field. The 34-year-old Suh is a defensive end, and he'll be trying to put pressure on Kansas City's star quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. And here's a few fun Super Bowl facts about Ndamukong Suh. He was born in the northwestern U.S. city of Portland, Oregon, the son of a Jamaican mother and a Cameroonian father. He says he would love to lift the Super Bowl trophy.
This is the second time around, and I look forward to having the opportunity to closing that out, because I've been very blessed to be able to have an individual career that has many accolades, but ultimate goal is to have the team accolade, and that's the Lombardi Trophy.
2 years ago, Ndamukong Suh had a good shot at that Lombardi Trophy, given to the Super Bowl champion. He was playing for the Los Angeles Rams, but they lost to the New England Patriots 13-3 in the Super Bowl.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Olympic organizers in Tokyo have unveiled a playbook of COVID-19 protocols for this year's games. Joining us with the details is VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Amid growing doubts that the delayed Tokyo Olympics will take place on schedule, Olympic organizers hope a list of new rules will give comfort to 80% of the Japanese public who are opposed to hosting the games during the pandemic. In a Wednesday news conference, Olympic organizers issued new guidelines that will be enforced this summer. And Pierre Ducret, director of Olympic Games operations at the IOC, says the new rules will be mandatory.
Obviously, there's a number of rules, and it's important people will be in a position to follow them. Each delegation will have a COVID officer monitoring the implementation of these rules by its own delegation to make sure that everyone understands very well what are the impact of not respecting some of these rules.
The protocols are part of a playbook published by Tokyo Olympic organizers, the IOC, and the International Paralympic Committee. And the new rules range from the normal practice of hand washing and social distancing to more stringent bans on singing and chanting during competition and physical touch among athletes. Participants will also be barred from visiting venues as spectators and will not be allowed to use public transport without permission. Mask wearing will be strictly enforced except when eating and sleeping. Those who fail to comply could face punishment or removal from the games. However, IOC Olympic Games Director Christoph Dubi says while disciplinary measures will be in place at the upcoming games, he believes the rules will not be violated.
Let's not discuss at this point in time the what ifs. We believe that a vast majority, if not all, will follow the playbooks. However, we have, as you know, at the time of the games, a disciplinary commission, and if push comes to shove, we have to activate the disciplinary commission, then it will be done.
Another area of concern is that this summer's influx of athletes into Japan will further spread the virus. It is not mandatory that competitors receive a vaccine, but according to the playbook, athletes and staff must show proof they have tested negative before departing for Tokyo, and they could be tested again once they arrive. In the meantime, Pierre Ducret says the IOC and National Olympic Committees will work together to encourage that all participants receive a vaccine ahead of the games.
It needs to be very clear how the connection between the result of a test, if it was to be positive, can affect the competition format, and discussions with all the international federations are taking place as we speak in this respect.
The number of new COVID infections in Japan rose to record highs in early January, prompting the Japanese government to issue a state of emergency in areas including Tokyo until February 7th. Coronavirus cases in those regions have since declined, but with hospitals still under pressure, this week the government extended the emergency until March. Pierre Ducret remains confident the games will take place in July and says while the event will look different, extraordinary measures are being taken to ensure the postponed Olympics are held safely.
There will be a number of constraints and conditions that the participants will have to respect and follow, which will have an impact on their experience, particularly when it comes to the social aspects of what an Olympic experience can be.
And Christoph Dubi says Tokyo has become a trailblazer for a brand new Olympic experience.
Tokyo, by the excellent work that is being done, is blazing the trail for next games. And we feel that putting all the relevant information for all participants in the games, actually it's the first time that it's being done this way, but certainly not the last.
The Olympic officials added they will publish updated guidelines in April that will include more details on testing and quarantine protocols that will be in place at the upcoming Tokyo Games. And that is all from me. Sunny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. Finally, let's give a super Sunny Side of Sports birthday salute to Lawrence Taylor, who won two Super Bowl titles with the New York Giants. Lawrence Taylor was born February 4th, 1959, in Williamsburg, Virginia. Lawrence Taylor is considered one of the greatest linebackers in National Football League history, and he's a proud member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. In fact, at the Hall of Fame webpage, Lawrence Taylor is described as a dominant force on defense who changed the outside linebacker position with his speed and strength. Happy birthday to two-time Super Bowl champion Lawrence Taylor. The 55th edition of the Super Bowl will be played on Sunday in Tampa, Florida, between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the defending Super Bowl champion, Kansas City Chiefs. up the February 4th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.